As our next speaker to give a presentation on this issue today, we have our co-sponsor, the president of our co-sponsoring organization, Tom Carroll, of the Foundation of Education Reform and Accountability. Tom also is the chairman of the Brighter Choice Charter School for Girls and Brighter Choice Charter School for Boys, and he serves as chairman of A Brighter Choice Scholarships, an innovative, privately funded initiative that provides scholarships for inner city children to attend the private school of their choice. He previously held research, fiscal, and administrative positions in New York with the governor's office, the state legislature, and the division of the budget. Mr. Carroll is also a member of the board of advisors for the Washington, D.C.-based Center for Education Reform and the Graduate Management Institute of Union College of Schenectady. Thank you very much, Tom Carroll.
I agree with John Reed that this is a historic moment in New York State. And although I don't share the governor's belief in the value of all the extra money he's putting up and where that will lead, I think there is a consensus that if that decision is being made, and it is, and I think it's one that is broadly agreed upon among most of the key stakeholders, that it has to be matched with accountability. And the governor in his visionary speech at Chancellor's Hall across the street included among many nice lines the following: there'll be no more excuses for failure. The debate will no longer be about money, but about performance. The goal will no longer be about adequacy, but excellence. And the timetable will no longer be tomorrow, but today. I share that sentiment. And I think what now needs to happen, in taking the vision that the governor articulated, is there are a tremendous number of operational details that have to be thought through in order to make this vision a reality over the next few years. The governor has hired able people in the form of Manny Rivera and John Reed to begin that process, but we are indeed at the beginning of that process. And so the vision for this conference was to bring together, to start a dialogue, which we think will take will continue for a number of years, among the key stakeholders to identify what the key issues are that have to be considered and what the key concerns are and what the areas of consensus and disagreement might be. From my perspective, there are a couple things that we think are very important considerations to consider. And we've released a report today, which is available in the room for those who haven't already grabbed it. The first thing is the importance of measuring the right stuff and measuring it well. And by what I mean by that is, right now in New York State, we do these snapshot tests every year. And what that test will tell you is how that particular group in a particular grade is doing at that particular time. People make the mistake of looking at one year's snapshot to the next and assuming that the ups or downs tell you anything about whether an individual school or school district is getting better or worse. And frankly, since there are different groups of kids being tested each year, and there's no adjustment to follow the same kids over time, you have the problem that I think of having a lot of false positives. A lot of schools are identified as bad that aren't necessarily bad, and you also have good schools that are identified. You have it working in both ways. Good schools identified as bad and bad schools identified as good by the simple fact that the data does not correctly measure or seek to measure something more important, which is the gains in the same students over time. I think that's the most fundamental change in the architecture of the state testing system that needs to occur in order for any of the governor's reforms to work. And similarly, if you're going to hold schools accountable and get people to buy into that, people have to agree that the fundamental way that students are measured in the state actually is legitimate and meaningful, or otherwise there'll be no credibility to the system. Second point is, I think there's a need to make accountability transparent and understandable. For accountability to be real, it requires that the public and policymakers, people that spend their lives thinking about psychometrics, that they actually have a sense of what's going on. I personally think that the current system of doing level one, level two, level three, level four is not understandable. Being involved in a number of schools in Albany, I can assure you that there are virtually no parents who understand this system. So there's a need to go to a scale, if you will, even if we administer the same exams, that's more understandable. Whether it's an A through F system or a 0 to 100 system or what have you. But when you do a 1, 2, 3, 4 system, and American culture is deeply embedded, everybody chanting they want to be number one, people don't understand that it's actually better in a state test to be number four and not number one. I think it causes unnecessary confusion. Third point is there needs to be fairer and more accurate labeling of schools. The school in need of improvement designation falls on schools equally if they miss one or two of their subgroup targets, or they miss 30 or 40 targets. And it is simply not accurate to take a school that basically is doing a really good job and failing with a particular subgroup and label them the same as a school that frankly is in total meltdown. So part of this relates to the way NCLB is structured, but right now literally there's more than 50 different ways that a school district could end up being listed as a school in need of improvement based on when you count all the different subgroups, all the grades and all the subjects. And I think there needs to be a more balanced way, a more nuanced way, and a more accurate way for the public to understand, to sort out what schools are good, what schools are mediocre, and what schools are bad. And the current system doesn't do that. And I think that some of the districts have rightly complained that relatively high-performing good districts have wrongly been labeled in kind of the parlance of newspapers as failing schools when they actually are not. Fourth, there needs to a serious discussion about eliminating what I would call conflicts of interest, which is right now, although the general people, virtually everyone in this room would know this, but most people on the street don't know it, school districts are allowed to score their own exams. And so the question is, when we move to a system in which it's not just reporting results, but there actually is, John Reed indicated, that there are going to be consequences for failure, the temptation and the pressure to shave at the margins how very subjective portions of state exams, particularly the fourth grade writing exam, the rubrics are so vague. There's any number of ways you could score that exam depending on who's looking at it. Two reasonable people could come up with completely different scores. So given that there is some subjectivity, if you pair that with actually an incentive for gaming the exams, I think it's extremely dangerous as we move forward. Other states contracted out. Other states require that the scoring be done regionally or be done by qualified professionals in other areas of the state, kind of swapping tests back and forth. But certainly, like in the case of Albany, where the Albany district scores its own exams, I don't think that's a smart way to go and will lead to a lot of public faith in the system going forward. Fifth, there's a need to ensure timely reporting. This last year, we had our first graduating class at Brighter Choice. We're a K-4 school. We took the English exam in January. We got the results in September. Those students graduated in July. So we were glad to find out that they scored well, but to find that information out was not useful to educators in the building at all, because there's nothing we could do. There was no useful information that came out of that that we could use in the classroom. So there's a need, although that the state testing system serves multiple purposes, primarily an accountability one, if you're going to administer the test, it would make a lot more sense to do it on a timely basis. Now, this year, under fairly intense criticism and pressure, the department has accelerated the timetable, and they're attempting with more resources to get it done earlier. And that's a impulse that I support, and I think we all should encourage, and support giving the department whatever resources they need in order to chop down the turnaround time for state exam reporting. Six. I think there needs to be, even if you have a system that correctly measures and correctly reports, there needs to be actual consequences at the end of the day for what happens. And Paul Peterson will be talking in a little bit about accountability systems in other states, including Florida, for example. But that's a state where if the schools are doing well, they get additional resources. And if they're doing poorly, the parents whose kids are trapped in low-performing schools are given a greater array of options to go to other alternatives, including in that state, scholarship or voucher programs. Now that's been truncated by the court system in Florida, but I think the system of expanding options for kids, particularly in the lowest performing schools, needs to be part of an accountability system. So I think these are some general broad principles. We've had some preliminary conversations with some of the key stakeholders, and I think it will be interesting to see as we hear the presentations as we go along, what areas we can find consensus on as we move forward in terms of restructuring the state system. I found very few people that are enamored of the current approach of accountability in New York. And I think the governor has raised the bar in terms of providing a vision of where we need to be. And I think the challenge to all of the people in the room and the challenge for the administration, the legislature, and the Board of Regents is taking that vision and operationalizing and figuring out where the rubber meets the road. How can we actually make this vision a reality that not only works for policymakers, but also works for educators and also works for parents and children? Thank you very much. Yes.
Tom, I'm a little bit concerned about some of the changes that might be made with NCLB.
Sure.
What do you think will happen down the road? Do you think that reading first may be at risk in these changes?
Yeah, I can't predict with any certainty what will happen. I think just because the political wind shifting in Washington, D.C., I'm not sure how this will come out at all. I think there's a general consensus that the act, even among and I would have counted myself as one of the original enthusiasts for the Federal No Child Left Behind Act. I think in terms of the impulse of what it was trying to achieve, in terms of literally leaving no child behind, creating a spotlight on those areas where districts and charter schools may not have been up to snuff, I think was very important. But I think most people would agree that the act micromanages districts and state education departments too much, that the accountability structure for a country this large and this varied is too inflexible, and that, as with almost every grand federal venture, the law of unintended consequences comes into play. And so how you sort all of that out with the shifting political power in D.C., I couldn't begin to imagine how this debate will end up. Yes, sir. Well, I have two fears. One is in the suggestion for contracts of excellence, which are actually very similar to the contracts that charter schools enter into with the Board of Regents or the state university. Having been through that process multiple times, I'm not sure that that's the most effective use of everybody's time. We literally, right now, just for little charter schools, fill out applications that are 500 or 600 pages long, and I'm not sure we wouldn't be better served coming up with something that was just 5 or 6 pages. So my fear is that whole process will spawn a bureaucracy, and you have, and I just know, and the schools that I'm involved with are all within 5-10 minutes of the state education department. So the prospect of being in a school district that's hundreds of miles away and having somebody reading all of these contracts and understanding the nuances on the ground in the district, I find, frankly, a little frightening. The second fear I have is now that the governor has laid this out as a policy issue, that policymakers in the legislature will think that these are all issues that they actually should decide. And although I don't always agree with the Board of Regents, I don't always agree with the State Education Department, and there's some things I profoundly disagree with them on, I certainly do not think that the state legislature is more equipped to decide a lot of what is going to make this succeed or not are very technical issues in terms of, do you go with a growth model, a value-added model, how do you set up cohorts, how do you measure gains over time? They're not, whether you have vertical integration of exams. These are questions that are very important substantively and may lead to the success or failure of the entire accountability system, but for which at least the legislators I've talked to are not equipped to decide those issues. So my fear is, on the one hand, the bureaucracy of that one provision of the contracts that he wants to enter into, and the second, that a lot of this stuff should not, I fear that when it gets into the negotiations in the next few weeks, that legislators, thinking they don't like certain things that are happening in New York City, they don't like things happening in other parts of the state, that they will try to take some of these issues and write them into the final legislation. Rather than, I think this is going to take years to perfect. And even when the education departments rolled out new exams and had years, there's often been mistakes. So I think we need to have it much more flexibly handled by the Board of Regents. And the legislature obviously has oversight, funding, and otherwise.
We actually do have time for another question or two, okay. Tom. But if I could, I forgot to make a point coming into this. We're making a, we're recording this conference and making a transcript of it, which will be available to you. And so we have a question mic there. So if anybody else who'd like to pursue a couple of questions with Tom would go over to the middle aisle to that microphone, it'll be helpful to have, and then identify yourself. It'll be helpful for the purposes of our transcript. Thanks.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Tom. So those questions have been lost to all history, so.